You're listening to Guy Fieri, episode 76.
I am the king.
I've been very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I've been here ruling the kingdoms.
You can't talk to me like that. The king can do as he likes.
A king does not ask. He commands.
A king doesn't discuss battle plans with stupid girls.
Stop.
You're talking to a king!
I'm telling Mother. You can't. How many bastards does he have running?
I will punish you.
Find who did that and bring him to me!
Previously on Guy Fieri, I have a massive hangover. Let's talk about the most important thing, and that's the amount of Botox that Calista Flockhart has had.
Oh, my Lord. You and I haven't had a good sit-down chat for a good few months. You know, testicles worn as earrings, because I love this thing.
Arrow's had a really bad season.
Yeah. You can't have Baby Bruce discovering the Batcave and not actually doing
it. Is that what happened?
Yeah, he discovered his father had a big secret, which is actually the fireplace moves
really?
Out of the way, and suddenly there's a secret passage.
But then what does that mean? Was it like a Wayne sextant?
I don't know. Did Daddy Wayne have the slinger?
My one issue was that he ripped the dress.
It was a beautiful piece.
I am the queen. I'm like, you're not anymore. There's a new one.
Yep.
I am the queen regent. You're going to be going off to marry because we need that, and you're going to have kids with the Pufta.
Yep.
Did you have a code name? I can't remember if you had a code name.
Not really.
Okay.
No.
Well, we're just going with it.
You can just ask me that in the podcast.
Well, that's true. Well, yeah, we're in it now. I figure I'm just easing through. Hey, everybody.
You're not going to edit this out now, are you?
No. I'm totally keeping it. Hey, everybody. It's Dean. Welcome to the all new, all different Guy Fieri that never seems to change, but changes constantly.
I was going
to
say, last time we recorded an episode, and it was like a year ago, it was the all new, all different
Guy
Fieri.
I think it's... I'm reforming slowly but surely, because it's really just me, and I kind of had a break for 6 months, and I'm excited to see what the podcast is going to be while I'm in the UK. For listeners that aren't aware, I'm going on my first holiday in 10 years, and I happen to be going, and there's Manchester Comic Con going on, and a UK artist I'm trying to meet. Look, my dream would be to track down a pub that Paul Cornell is drinking at and go, hi, I love your work. But these are all fanciful. Like, that's like saying I want to, you know, meet one Australian and find them in Australia if I was an English person.
Yeah, it's like when you go overseas and you say, hey,
I should introduce you. Okay, so everyone, I'm back with a new fun and fabulous guest. Listeners from long times ago will remember the lovely Jason from Sydney.
Hi.
Hey. He is on a lot of podcasts, and he's back again. He's down for the weekend. It's actually the Queen's birthday when we're recording this. Is it her actual birthday today?
No, I actually just saw they changed the Queen's birthday in Queensland for next year. So she has a different birthday.
It just, you know what's driven me crazy about this day? The two things on my social media feed are either pictures of food, and I'm so hungover. Mm-hmm. So hungover.
I was responsible for the fur party last night.
The fur party last night, I may have been doing shots of Jack Daniels. I was in a drinking mood, and I think I handled it really well. And my body's still recovering. But when I think about it now, I haven't really had any water. So, something goes ding. That's your phone. That's a reminder for me to have some water. So, Jason was down for the weekend, and we've been watching some movies, and we thought we'd dive into a bit of a Guy Fieri ep, which is, it's always nice when we get to, like, do one here or there.
Yeah. It's kind of rare. It's actually about a year or so.
It has. You know, you're always welcome. So, before we dive into talking, because we went and watched... Mad Max Fury Road. But before we dive into talking movies and things, let's talk about other things. Like, you've been telling me all weekend you're part of a Transformers group on Facebook.
I have. So, I don't use Facebook very much. I'm very bad at the face space.
Facebook is great.
I'm coming around to it. That was actually the Facebook Messenger thing that just dinged on my phone as a reminder to mute my phone while we're recording. So it's literally the worst thing that has ever happened to my wallet. I've started buying collector's editions of figures, and one of my friends told me that all of the collector's groups and all of the action figure collector's groups and stuff that he's a part of on Facebook, it can become quite addicting because you'll go out and you buy figures.
Specifically to show people on the Facebook page? That is ridiculous and both also awesome.
You go out, you're craving this hit where people just, you want people to like your purchase. And so,
is this a Facebook page that anyone can join?
It is. It's called the Transformers Collectors Club Australia.
Cool.
And if you are a Transformers collector or a fan, I encourage you to go and have a look, because it's a nice, friendly group.
So what do you do? What do you do? You just kind of post, because I'm like a part of like the hot geek, gay geek group and everything. And really, it's just, and things like that, or gay nerds group. And it's really interesting, because you've got the people that are posting, like what we, Guy-Fi posts on what I post on Guy-Fi's page, which is interesting conversations or pictures of hot fellas. Because really, I'm kind of like, it's just something to entertain people throughout their day. It's hardly going to be a social base for society. Or interesting, getting some interesting conversations going. Is it that same kind of thing?
It is. It all comes back to, as we like to call it in the group, plastic crack. So there's a few members on the group who actually sell Transformers. There's some people who import them, and yeah, we call them our crack dealers.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So yeah, they're pretty nice. You went home. You've been in Melbourne for the weekend, and you actually went back home to your folks' house and found your boxes of Transformers, didn't you?
I did. So I used to live in Singapore for a couple of years, and if you're a Transformers collector, Singapore's a really good place to be because it's close enough to Japan that. You get a lot of the Japanese figures at a good price, and people just seem to import them themselves. But also you get a lot of the American ones because everything's distributed by Hasbro Asia. And so there's a shopping center in Singapore that you can go to on a Sunday, which I'm going to next weekend, called China Square Central.
It's world travelers. It's like, I'll be in the UK, you'll be in Singapore. It's exciting.
No, it's Guy-Fi goes international.
Yeah. Guy-Fi goes global.
Yeah. GFGG. Yeah.
Look, I'll definitely be doing episodes in pubs in England, whatever form they may take.
It might. There could be some beer on the cards.
I think it's important.
But yeah, so these shops in Singapore, like they have, they've just got shelves and shelves of Transformers, and it's not like they've got the same thing stocked, five deep on the shelf. It's like a different item next to a different item next to a different item.
So you're literally a kid at a candy store.
Very much so. And there's a lot of... There's an increasing number of what we call third-party Transformers out there now.
Is that like the lower quality stuff?
Not necessarily. Some of them are pretty high quality, but it depends on the company. Because Transformers comics are really driving fandom at the moment.
Yeah.
There's so Hasbro has some figures that are based on some of the figures in the comics, but it takes Hasbro a really long time to work characters into a toy line. When they come out, they're not exactly as they are in the comic. And so there's a lot of third-party companies who've come out and they've gone, right, we're going to make a version of Swerve that is like is the way that he exists in IDW's Transformers More Than Meets the Eye comic, where he's a bright, happy character. It's the first Transformers figure that I've had that actually has a smile on his face. And he comes with a tray of Energon drinks that he can serve to everyone else because he's a bartender.
Okay, that's cool.
So yeah, so that's been happening. I went out to my parents' place because when I moved back from Singapore, a lot of my Transformers went into boxes in their place because I live in Sydney. And I went down to the house and I dug all these boxes out and I took every figure out and I photographed them for the group yesterday. as just sort of like I'm showing off my collection, here you go. And so got a lot of likes, which is
like,
what you want on Facebook, right?
Do you think it's maybe because it's a long weekend, people aren't looking, or they're just maybe jealous of your stash?
I think it's a little bit of both. But I mean, it's never really been a competitive group. It's more a supportive group. So people will see what you post and they'll be like, I really like that.
But like at the end of the day, if you don't get the likes, you don't get the likes. It doesn't mean that it's not
the likes.
Quality
cool.
What you're putting into the world. But yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's very cool. Okay,
so justified.
Let's do you read what comic? Oh my God, you read Midnighter this week, didn't you?
I did.
What did you think of it? I haven't read it yet. I haven't got I didn't realize, because I don't really follow DC. Didn't realize that there were all these changes in the DC's universe.
Well, so Marvel Wildstorm's are kicking gone, goals. Isn't it?
Well, Marvel are kicking goals. I'm loving reading Marvel at the moment, but that's for another podcast. So what did you think of Midnighter?
I liked it. It's very much... I'm a fan of The Authority.
Yeah.
So
I think you got me onto The Authority, actually.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I don't want to give you that claim, but I think you did.
I'll take the credit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a fan of The Authority, but I'm a fan of Ellis's run.
Yeah.
And sort of less so, but I've come to accept what happened when Miller got on it.
So what happened when Miller came on?
So Ellis did like, I think it was like the first three or four stories and then handed it over.
So I'm trying to remember from what I've read, what did Miller do?
So he made it a little bit more grounded in reality and made the Authority more of a an Earth-based team.
Oh, I was trying to think of an actual storyline to see if it's something I've actually read.
So Miller had the US president as like the guy who was trying to take out the team.
Okay, I haven't read that. Yeah. So who's writing Midnighter at the moment? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Were you happy with it? What did you think?
Yeah, I was happy with it. I think they've changed the look of Midnighter.
Is he married? Is he married in this?
No. This is what I was getting to. I got the feeling that there's something that's gone before this book that I've missed because I don't really look at... I don't look out for Marvel or DC comics.
Marvel's kicking goals. Kicking goals.
I'm going to have to look at some Marvel stuff then. But so Apollo is out of the picture. And Midnighter has a Grindr profile. So you see his Grindr profile.
Okay, I need to go and get this comic.
It's quite fun, but I'm pretty sure they've changed the look of him as well.
Yeah,
he's got dark hair and more of a shaved head.
All right, I'm gonna have to actually read it for me. Did it sit well with you? I feel like
I thought it was pretty consistent with the character.
Okay,
the
from a gay perspective, run, with him having a Grindr profile and everything, how do you feel about that in relation to a portrayal of modern homosexuality? It's very deep.
There's a whole page sex scene.
Oh, okay. I need to check this out.
So it's kind of interesting because Midnight has met this guy and he's sort of showing him around his world and
his superhero world.
Yeah, and so like so Midnight has all the door technology from the carrier.
Okay.
But it's tied into his apartment, and there's this weird mention that his apartment can exist in any city in the world, which is kind of weird. And it's a bit weird, but yeah. And so he's met this guy, and he's showing him around his world, and there's some mention of Apollo, but it's more that something like Apollo has left him.
Okay, all right. I'm gonna check it out, and then we'll dive into that more in another episode. So let's talk movies, because movies is what we've had a big weekend.
It's been a big weekend.
I've been drinking a lot,
and
a lot of alcohol. And I actually had my future brother-in-law's Bucks party, and Enrico didn't really want a Bucks party, so we just basically played bubble soccer, went and had a Palmer, and then saw Mad Max Fury Road.
You are still recovering from the bubble soccer as well.
Oh yeah, my body is a little bit sore, it must be said. I didn't fit in the bubble.
Well, I just want to point out for people who are listening, if you don't know what bubble soccer is, when Dean said bubble soccer to me, I thought it was sort of the equivalent of playing soccer in a massive like bubble bath thing, but no, it's not. You actually put yourself into an inflatable bubble.
You are in inflatable bubbles. Your head, like your head and your shoulders and your torso and even your bum are all, so it's basically knees and so that you can do the kicking, and you're in giant bubbles and you're trying to kick the ball and you're running into each other. And I've got to admit, I'm a bit of a juggernaut, knocking people left and right. I knocked my brother
you're
over.
Not gonna,
and
you're not going to put
I
on the.
I may have fucked up his knee, but. I take people down.
You're not going to put on the "I'm the juggernaut, bitch."
Oh, I hate him. I actually, that side story. I was a producer assistant for a movie, and when he auditioned, and he's an interesting individual.
I've heard this.
Like, I don't know how else to put it. It's very interesting.
So he's in.
He's
in Chuck for a while. Well, as well.
And he's made a career, and the people he has around him, and he's been able to actually build a career based on like. I wouldn't say little talent, but build, changing
it's
a profile.
Based,
that's
it's based more on his personality.
It's totally based more on his personality, which is why it's kind of weird to meet him out of that setting. But anyway.
So hang on. So who are we talking about? It's Vince. I can never remember his last name.
I can never remember his last name either, which is why I was pushing towards moving on before you asked me for the name. But yeah, so we went and saw Mad Max Fury Road. Now, had you seen it before?
That was my third time.
Oh, that was your third time. Me, it was the first. I was really hesitant about a Mad Max film and seeing a remake of it. This was fucking awesome.
So it's not a remake.
Oh, okay. It's not a remake, but all right. It's a continuation of the blah 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 blah
with recasting.
Yeah. Well, it's not the same movie.
No, it's definitely not. So there was actually, Mad Max Fury Road has been in production hell for a really long time.
Yeah.
There was a time around, I think, 2001, 2002, that they were going to press ahead with a new Mad Max movie with Mel Gibson. And
really?
Yeah. And so I've since seeing the movie and enjoying it, I've been digging a lot into like Wikipedia pages all about it.
With Mel Gibson, like, but he was too busy throwing phones at Jews?
No, see, this is before Mel Gibson became a massive Jew hater.
Okay.
And so now that the public knows he's a massive Jew hater, he's not welcome in Hollywood anymore. But also he's a bit loud. He's a bit old.
Yeah. Yeah, like there's something to be said for people like, yeah, when you're hit a certain age, you maybe shouldn't be doing everything. But and we don't see what you are. Oh my God, I know. So Will Smith and his family are bad enough. Anyway, so yeah, like, and it was meant to be filmed in Australia, wasn't it?
I got the distinct feeling that it was filmed in Australia. I think it was. I'm not sure.
Oh, I thought because of when it started raining in Australia, they had to move to another country.
Oh, did they?
Maybe it wasn't you. I was saying that it was meant to be filmed in Australia, and then because we got a lot of storms, they had to move. Instead of moving the filming schedule, they moved where they were filming. For those that haven't seen it, really see it. Like, I'm not a Fast and Furious fan or anything like that, but this is literally a movie that's an entire car chase in this post-apocalyptic world. And especially seeing... when you look at movies and post-apocalyptic worlds, it's a very interesting thing that it plays with and tone that it plays with.
I think it's important to recognise also that what we often see these days as a post-apocalyptic world comes back to the vision that they introduced in Mad Max 2 and 3.
Oh, and really?
Yeah, like all of these places where, like, obviously because I'm a massive nerd, the one that comes to mind Firefly with the market planet in the first episode where I think it was a Persephone. And so, like, the docks and the markets where everything's reduced to sort of, like, basic instincts and everyone's sort of cobbling together stuff. And that's really a vision that's come from Mad Max.
Some kind of apocalypse happen. Like, I kill plants, so food and me are going to run out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like, it's a, I do like seeing this kind of neo-funk, steampunk... with a really ultra edge energy to it. Oh, all these words are wrong though in trying to describe it.
But they're cultural reference.
Like I want to already go to a rave dance party with a Mad Max Fury Road theme.
Yeah.
Like the look, the tone, it was all just really exciting.
I think one of the things that really got me about so the vehicle designs in Mad Max.
Yeah.
They're absolutely off the wall crazy. There's like a two-story. There's a two-story muscle car and all of this stuff.
It's fantastic.
Absolutely brilliant. We'll talk about the Doof Warrior in a minute as well. But one of the things that stuck out to me about I think it was Mad Max 2. Mad Max 1. I don't know if you've seen Mad Max.
Give me some history.
Before society fell. He's a cop. There's a justice system. Really? There's a court.
Really?
Yeah. Are we still doing spoilers?
Well, hang on. It's still post-apocalyptic?
No.
So it's set in like modern day or something?
I think it's set sort of in a near future because the idea is that gangs are starting to take over the highways.
And the world hasn't fallen yet.
No.
Oh my God.
The world falls between Mad Max 1 and 2.
Wow.
And this is all alluded to in sort of like the voiceovers that you hear at the start of Mad Max 4. There's oil wars.
Mad Max 4. That's not what we've watched.
Sorry, Fury Road is
4. Fury Road, yeah. But it is 4, yeah.
And there's all of these voiceovers saying that... you know, there's oil wars, there's mankind turning on each other and humanity's fallen. And I think there's one point where they say humanity now has a half-life.
Mm.
And that's what they refer to with Immortan Joe's War Boys. They're throwing their half-lives away going into battle. And when they think they're going to die, they spray their...
They chrome themselves.
They chrome themselves. And they're told that, you know, they will shine on the way to Valhalla. And it's really interesting, sort of the religious cult that's been built up around these guys.
Well, I mean, I think it's nice to see socially that, you know, the people that are left aren't, you know, living full lives. Yeah. They're not, you know, you're in a post-apocalyptic world, but it's really interesting. Like, I mean, they've already started filming... I mean, okay, yes, spoilers are on. They've already started filming the second movie. Or
I've heard it's in production.
Filming was starting this month.
That'd be awesome if...
Yeah, like that. But you know what I loved? Okay, so Megan Fox, hang on, I need to say. Megan Fox is in this film. God, I hate her. Like,
isn't it Megan Gale?
Oh, yeah, I'll get it wrong. Sorry, Megan Fox. Megan Gale.
Sorry, Megan Fox, we hate you just as well.
There's something about, and I don't know what it is, but with Megan Gale specifically, she looks completely out of place to the rest of the cast. Everyone else...
I didn't mind. Honestly, I didn't mind.
But it was like no one else's hair is that man. Everyone had short hair. No one was that beautiful. And it was just a bit much. She was awesome in her fighting scene and shooting scene. Like, she was great. Mm. Seeing her die, I also loved immensely.
I want to get back to the car design.
Okay, go on, do it.
So one of the things that was a prevalent theme in Mad Max 2 was the thought that in such a post-apocalyptic world, it's really important to be able to get from place to place. And so the thought was that people would do anything to keep their vehicles running.
Yeah.
And so there's a car in Fury Road that is, it's literally a car that's had its wheels replaced with tank tracks. And there's a, you know, obviously there's a bad guy who drives it and he's chasing them down. But when you see that car, you sort of like, oh, that actually makes sense given the terrain that it's crossing.
Yeah.
And like a lot of the designs of the cars, and the cars really exist. They actually physically built them.
Yeah.
They're not all CGI creations or anything. But a lot of them kind of make sense presented in the context that they're in the movie. They are absolutely insane. The car designs are a joy to behold.
Oh, fantastic.
There's one
great Australian cast as well. Which one stood out for you?
So the car design that stands out for me, and I think for everyone who sees the movie, is the Doof Warrior. There is the bad guy, and
do you mean
Joe,
you mean the guitar guy?
The guitar guy.
Sorry, I was confused when you were saying Doof Warrior. Okay.
So, when things happen in the movie, we're going to be spoilery.
We're spoilering a bit, but basically there's a dude on a guitar playing guitar on top of a car.
I'm getting
with
to
fire.
But what that is that it's, so at the back of this car, there's four guys playing drums, and they're trying to drum up the warriors to go into battle. And so there's this really good percussive beat to it. I love the score of the movie as well.
It's great.
So the score is by, actually we'll talk about the score in a bit, but as you pan up for the first reveal of this guy, there's you see these four guys playing these huge drums, and that's their job. Like, they're not warriors; they just play
drums.
Yeah,
they're just
drummers.
Here come the drums! Here come the drums!
And it pans around, and this guy's got like a wall of loudspeakers behind him, and he's just sitting there cutting loose on the guitar. And you're like, "Holy crap! That's awesome! That's amazing!" And then you're like, wait a second, the camera's holding on him. There's going to be something else. And then there's one point where he just strums and flames come flying out
it's
of the guitar.
It's so cool.
And it is so over the top that it's ridiculous.
But you know what's awesome
amazing.
As well? Like the storyline is great. Like, it's really, they establish all characters really well. Mm-hmm. The use of women in a really strong way, I really thought was brilliant. Especially to not really make this about Max. I think it's so smart.
This is really Furiosa's movie.
Yeah.
And Mad Max happens to be in it.
And that's, I love that fact, because it was one of the things for me that didn't appeal to me that much about this. But making Max really a secondary character, he's our touchstone to it, but very much a secondary character to everything that's going on,
and
is
I think
absolutely
at this point
brilliant.
It's probably worth pointing out that Charlize Theron does such an amazing job as Furiosa.
I don't know if these kind of films would be ones that could win Academy Awards. But she, she's an actress who is great, but I can take or leave at times. Mm-hmm. Not for any other reason, but just the content of the work. But she's always fantastic in what she does. She always really commits to a role. She's one who sometimes I love and sometimes I go, eh. But that's not her. It's the product as a whole.
Mm.
But her in this, amazing.
So she is a strong, ass-kicking and handicapped woman. So, like, she doesn't have a right hand.
It's
She's
brilliant.
Got a hook.
It's
She's
absolutely
amazing.
Brilliant.
So one of the things I love, since we are being a little bit spoilery.
Oh, yeah, spoilers are happening.
There's a point where they're trying to shoot out a car that's coming, the light on a car that's coming in the distance, and Max has taken a couple of shots and missed. And then he just sort of goes to Furiosa, look, you're a better shot. Here you go, you take it.
Yeah.
And then gives her his shoulder to lean on.
It's great.
And, you know, it's great. There's a really good recognition of strong females in the movie. And this is something that no one, like, if you go back even a month or two, no one thought they'd be having this conversation about Mad Max movie.
It's not just that. It's really interesting that they've made these smart choices.
Mm.
It's really interesting that they've made these really conscious decisions to do things this way. And I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I get quite a kick out of it, in fact, because they've made choices to really deceive us so that we get this surprise, which is really hard in films nowadays.
And it's a really worthwhile surprise.
It makes it so much better, because it's such a strong and simple story about the characters, and you're really with all of them along the journey. There are villains, there are heroes, there are struggles, and it's in this one giant car chase, and it's fucking awesome.
So part of what I think makes the movie for me, and like I said, I'm really into movie scores, and so Junkie XL, Tom Holkenborg is the musician who did the score for
Mad Max. It's brilliant.
It's fantastic. It's been on repeat on my it's been on repeat sort of half Mad Max, half Eurovision on my Google Music for a few weeks.
What did you think about Guy Sebastian being in Eurovision? I thought the song was great.
I thought he was fine.
I thought he did a great performance. You weren't taken with it?
No, I thought he was fine. I've added it onto my playlist. I like the song.
It's a good song. I thought he did a really good job.
Yeah. Let's get back to Mad Max.
Okay.
So, one of the things I thought was...
He doesn't let me tangent. Like,
no.
He's all about rules and control, and I'm all about letting the freak fly. It's a very interesting dynamic.
One of the things that I loved about the score is there are sections of the score... Like when they're going into battles on the road and in this canyon, which there's an absolutely amazing part of the battle where there's bad guys on bikes and they're using the landscape to propel the bikes over the war rig and dropping from bombs. Above.
Yeah.
And like there's this thumping beat. It just doesn't stop during those scenes, and it's amazing.
And
but at the same time, Holkenborg can just flick it around and he can break your heart because when they actually get to where they're going and they finally find the many mothers.
I felt that the score is amazing, but I also felt like that was very Planet of the Apes.
So to me,
something
to
about me, the tone of that moment. I know it's not the end of the film or anything, but the tone of that moment felt very Planet of the Apes for me.
Yeah, it's when you realize, you know, when the hero has succeeded but then lost. And
but I don't know. I was actually thinking there was it was something I almost felt like about the way that moment was filmed, like or something within the music, like something about it resonated visually with Planet of the Apes for me.
Well, it was probably like the desert with the sand blowing and you know fools lost it all but it's utter despair for Furiosa to get to where she was going and find that it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And that's where the battle
starts. And also that Megan Gale is naked.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, there's that. But yeah, I mean that is what it is. But as you mentioned earlier, there's a massive great Australian cast. I was so impressed with
brilliant
myself.
Australian cast. Like there's so Rose from All Saints
during the first time I watched the movie, there's an old lady there and I was watching it and I'm just like, she has got to be the crazy old woman from Farscape.
And she was.
Look, there's Melissa Jaffa.
The cast are brilliant. Like, it's a really strong movie. It worries me for the second movie. I think one of the reasons why they've dived into it so much now is so that they don't have... Not only can they keep the momentum going, but they can't let outside influences really change the second film.
So do you know what... So the next movie is apparently going to be called Mad Max Furiosa.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird because you'd think that would have been what they called this one.
But then we would have, like, it was the whole point was surprising us, you know? But it's just...
It is kind of funny that it was called Fury Road, but most of the action did not take place on a road. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, but it's just, I think one of the reasons why they're driving into it so much is so that they can keep that momentum going and not let outside influences change the structure and tone of it. I think it's brilliant and really strong. I recommend everyone going to see it. It's definitely going to be one I'm going to get on Blu-ray or DVD. Now, before we dive into your next film talk, because you went and saw Tomorrowland?
I went and saw Tomorrowland.
Okay, let's talk Sense8.
Yeah.
All right, Sense8 came out.
We can talk Sense8 for about 5 minutes.
I think you're lucky if we're going to even get that far. All right, Sense8 came out on Netflix. It's the Wachowski brothers.
And it's Joe Straczynski from Babylon 5.
Exactly. It's like there's a lot going on here. It's got a lot of hype. It's all over my news feed on Facebook. Like I have people, bears constantly, I shouldn't have gone so much. Every bear I know is constantly showing that image from the start of it of two bears kissing, feeling like this is or eating the ice cream, like this is a huge moment when I don't seem to care about it. Because I could not get, I think we got 15 minutes through and I was done. Yes, we watched it after Mad Max.
There was a very specific moment that was the point where we both...
When Martha Jones, one, has an American accent. We know she's British. Why would she need an American accent? Two, Freeman Agar...
Freema Agyeman.
Yes. But more importantly, the accent was one issue I had. I had no issue with the nudity. I had no issue with the lesbian sex. But the cum on the dildo and the dildo being a pride strap-on, and I was done. Like, I it was the pride. It wasn't even the cum, but the minute it hit the ground and I went, is that a rainbow flag on a dildo? Like, I was done.
I got the impression that it was meant to be during the Pride Festival, which is why she said Happy Pride.
She said Happy Pride, but I'm like, come on.
Like, well, literally, but yeah.
Yeah, but it just as a moment. The problem for me, from what you've told me as well, you haven't watched any more either. No. The whole first episode is a lot of exposition, and it's a lot of exposition. And you know what? It's every individual moment getting its own massive chunk. Now, if this wasn't a Netflix series, it would have been approached in a completely different manner. But because it's an original series with Netflix, they do take a very different approach in how they're creating it. All the Netflix series is, except for the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, because at the start, the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt was meant to be something very different. It was for another network. And then they were halfway through and then the money got pulled, so they jumped over to Netflix. So the beginning of the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is very much in a sitcom broadcast format, but that changes once you can tell the tone of the whole thing changes once they jump to another network. Yeah. But so this one especially, but the use of storytelling, I couldn't get through the episode. Do I want to give it another try? No, it's just too much exposition. Each individual character, each individual moment, seeing each person experience this, there are ways, like, you people are directors, there are ways to do this in a way that even if you don't break it down to a small degree, you can actually expand it in a really nice way, but it was just uninteresting for me. I was bored. Like, I was really bored. And this is a strong idea that I kind of enjoy. And even when people are saying, just wait for the next step, I'm like, I don't want to get through the first one.
I think that's been an issue with a number of series over the years that the first episode, or even like the first
season. But every first episode, I'm sorry, every first episode is exposition. You're establishing people, you're establishing places, but every episode is always, like, come on. Yeah, your pilot episode, you have to give something to your audience in that sense. You can leave them hanging slightly, but 15 minutes in, I was not interested. Not at all. I was bored.
So for the first episode, like, it's clear that something major has happened and they're setting this up. I am going to give it another go. I'm going to watch it later this week.
All right.
But
I don't know if I will.
But, I mean, first impression is, it's a very Wachowski thing, though. Like,
I know, but that is not an adjective.
No, but it is. You said at one point that it looked overproduced.
I said multiple times. It looks very overproduced.
And that's what I mean. That's the Wachowski thing. Like,
and you know what? In the
hyper,
film,
hyper, like, hyper colorful.
But in a film medium, that can give you something different. Yeah. In a television series, in something that is squeezed down, and, you know, like, the fact that we still, in that 15 minutes, have no established touchstone character at all for the audience to be able to travel with along the story. And when you're dealing with seven different people sharing seven different lives, I get it, but are you kidding me?
I actually wonder if... I wonder if there is going to be a standout person in the cast that is going to be the, you know, your everyman and your way in the story. I suspect there might not be.
I don't think there is either. And the thing with that then, if that's going to be the case, you really needed to, like, getting every single moment, every single perspective, every single kind of thing, every person, I felt like I was repeatedly watching the same scene. And that was my problem.
I think there was a point to that, though.
Yeah, but the problem for me then is, I've watched this already. Am I really going to watch it for the seventh time? Like, are you kidding me? Could we not have experienced them all seeing her at the same time in a little bit of a montage-y thing and then moved on? Like,
I think that was the montage.
No, that wasn't, because there were literal scenes in between. Like, it actually looked like different days, but it wasn't, because they're at different parts of the world. But also, the moment it happened and moved on, and then it's all these different energies. One's having a conversation with the band people about that dream that she had, like, last week, and then we're actually experiencing the other person have it right at that moment. It just didn't connect, and it just felt like, okay, you're jumping backwards and forwards, and it needed some kind of pull. And that can be, is something that may be a potential failure with future productions of Netflix for me, because creating a different kind of medium and exploring it is something that we need, but you need to be able to want me to watch it.
I think it's important to realize, though, that Netflix shows, although we can, you know, we can talk about Netflix playing with the format and stuff as much as we want, they're still producing 40-minute episodes of TV that can be broadcast elsewhere in the world.
Yeah.
They don't have to only exist on Netflix. And so the whole thing does need to actually, it does need to stand alone as an episode. But with the binge-watching behavior of people looking at things on Netflix, a bumpy first 15 or 20 minutes doesn't necessarily mean that
it's a bad thing. I completely disagree. I think it was an issue that a lot of people had with Grace and Frankie. I loved Grace and Frankie. I thought it was great. While the opening
you mean the lesbian sex scene or
No. Grace, I'm talking about the series, sorry, the Netflix series, yeah. Grace and Frankie.
Oh, sorry. Okay,
which is Lily Tomlin and what is her name? Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda. And it's their series where their husbands tell them, this is another Netflix original series, and their husbands, instead of announcing their retirement, announce that they're gay and getting married. And their women in their...
Okay, I'm going to go and watch this because Jane Fonda was amazing.
Can I tell you, both of them are... Oh, wasn't she just?
Yeah.
I only rewatched the whole... Like, that was an amazing series. But this series, everyone expected the Golden Girls, and you know, the first episode, it's not that it has its pitfalls, but it establishes that moment. Hmm. The second one really establishes it in a different way, and then it's a series that kept on rolling with the tone. And I think what was hard for some people is because it's a series that very much avoided stereotypical plot points, storylines, tropes, really jumped through them in a different way. And I think that's something a lot of people struggled with. Now, this is another example.
I quite appreciate it when a series does that.
But this is another example of, like, it is doing it in a different manner. And all right, talking about it now, because we've gone for more than 5 minutes, so we'll get off it, because I did only watch 15 minutes.
Netflix series I want to talk about.
Okay, cool. In this conversation, it's making me want to go back and keep watching, just because clearly there's something in it for me, because I'm still talking about it.
I think we've spent longer talking about it than we have watching it. So it's time to go back and rewatch it.
Absolutely. So what's the other Netflix you want?
Let's talk about Daredevil.
Oh, okay. I've watched it all.
Uh-huh. So have I.
It Begins. I loved it. The outfit was terrible at the end.
I would expect to see the suit go under a few revisions for season two.
I agree. Really, look, hope. I think it was a mistake for them to launch the suit as any kind of advertising. I think they could have avoided it completely, so that that moment would have been more special. I thought it was absolutely amazing. I'm shocked that they chose to kill Ben Urich. There were a lot of surprises in this series. I think it was really strong, really brilliant. In fact, I really enjoyed the living crap out of it.
I don't remember the actress's name or the character's name.
Jessica from
I only call her
True
Jess.
Blood. Jess from True Blood.
Yeah. So when Jess from True Blood was sitting in the warehouse with Wesley and with the gun on the table. And
that
she got the gun, and I know we're talking spoilers, but we're talking spoilers because, like, it's been out for a couple
exactly.
Months now.
There's nothing. If
scene
it's more
was
than
amazing,
a week,
and I didn't expect it to go the way.
No,
it
and was. Neither did I. And admittedly, I was at work, and I was talking with the new guy who has my job, and was talking with him about this, and he was like, "What episode are you up to?" And I told him, he's like, "Oh my god, you're an episode before the episode where everything changed and kicks off." And I was talking about how I was just like, "Yeah, I don't need to keep watching it. I want to. It wasn't bad or anything, but it wasn't in my must watch list, unlike Gilmore Girls right now, which is."
Let's talk about
was brilliant.
A thread that hasn't been picked up for the end of series one of Daredevil, but it's got to come back. What was the kid? The black death or something. They remember the kid that they imported through the
I think that personally for me is touching more on the supernatural nature of it, and that'll show up in the Iron Fist series.
Actually, yes, that might show up in
that's
the other
my
Netflix
take on
Marvel
it. Like,
series,
I think that child and that tone and Miss Wang or whatever her name is.
So what do you think she is?
I have no idea.
But I think she left.
Yeah, and she'll never come back to Daredevil. But I think we will see her in Iron Fist.
I think so.
Yeah, because I do think the Netflix series will all touch.
There's four of them.
Yes. Well, Jessica Jones will totally touch on Daredevil. I think they'll all touch within their own universe. Cloak and Dagger.
Is there going to be some touching of Charlie Cox? Because I'm up for that.
Oh, well, there you go. We'll see what happens. But I loved it. I thought Daredevil was fucking great.
I did too. I thought it was really good. I thought Vincent D'Onofrio did an amazing job.
Absolutely. Like, all the casting was really great. The fight scenes and the choreography was spectacular. Like everyone in the product. This is what I enjoy the most, is this is a show where you really see a strong production team bringing something to the fore. The writers did such an excellent job with the Kingpin to really craft a character that we empathize with so much. It's so strong. And it was just ecstatic. And I was loving it.
There are two fight scenes that stood out for me. They're not, you know, one of them is a full out fight scene. The other one is just a well choreographed scene. The first one is the hallway scene at the end of the second episode, which is, it is astounding. One long shot.
No, it's not.
Well, no, but
go back and watch it. So there's edits.
It's presented as one long shot,
but it's not.
Of course, it's not.
There's three edits.
You can't do that as one long shot.
Well, you could, but there are three edits.
Yeah, and that much is obvious. But to the viewer, it's one long shot. There's just one long pan, and it's great. I really like it.
Oh, golden.
And the second is the scene where the camera is inside the taxi and just rotating around as things happen, and you see someone come out of a door behind the taxi, and then they walk up, and this it goes on for I think a minute or two.
It's great.
It's really, really,
it's well really, done. Really impressive. Really good series. Really looking forward to the second season. A really nice way to touch on the gritty side of Marvel Universe and really present it in a great way.
Well, so there's one thing that I felt they perhaps didn't do as well as they could have. And that is, in fact, tying it into the rest of the Marvel Universe. Because
but when you think about it, the other Marvel Universe television series is ABC. So there's they did enough. Like, I think there's a danger in all of these series trying to feed back into themselves and be relevant in relation to the movie series. They have to stand on their own, in their own right. And while they're and then the danger also becomes that the movies then have to justify through to the television series. You don't want to connect a thread so much that you're shooting yourself in the foot.
I know. I guess so. For me, the point where it seems like the connection is a bit tenuous is, oh my god, the Avengers have been through. There's been a massive battle for New York. You know, obviously we've seen that, and part of the corruption in the corporation in Daredevil was that they were corrupt and they were profiting themselves on the rebuild of New York City in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
And that seemed like it was just sort of like they've put that up there on a pedestal and they're constantly like referencing it back, but they're only sort of referencing it like to the side. So
yeah, but like when you think about it, well, one, because it's a property that's owned in another direction, even though part owned, but also,
but it's still the point of Daredevil.
Yeah, it's still part of the Marvel Universe, but it's nice to actually see something that focuses on the street level crime in a different way. These aren't things that the Avengers deal with. And that's what's really, it's important to note, like the Avengers don't, the Avengers are in these big cataclysmic things
events.
And this is street level and the kind of, you know, you're not suddenly going to have Daredevil break into a Hydra base. And if we do, that will be disappointing. Mm-hmm. It will be interesting to see whether the character of Daredevil shows up in Civil War though.
Well, so that is actually an interesting thing. When is Civil War slated to come out?
Next May.
So 2016.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's that's the same Captain weekend America movie,
as
right?
Batman and Superman. Civil War. Yep. Captain America Civil War comes out the same weekend as Batman and Superman. So sorry, Batman Superman.
We'll sorry see you the about
following it. Week. No, I'll just have a big birthday. It's on my birthday weekend. All these big movies are happening on my birthday weekend. So it'll be a movie weekend. So yeah, okay, that's Daredevil. Let's now, we're heading towards the home straight. So let's talk about, you've just come back from the movies and you went and saw Tomorrowland.
I did. I saw Tomorrowland today.
What is this about?
So, we're doing spoilers.
So
I'm going to have to spoil it because you haven't seen it. So
that's okay. I don't need to.
Tomorrowland, the central conceit of the movie is that there's this so-called other place that you can get to and that you can see, and the main character gets she comes across a pin, which is, if you've been to Disneyland, when you wander around Disneyland parks, you can collect pins. And one of the pins is, in fact, the Tomorrowland pin, because Tomorrowland is one of the sections of Disneyland.
Oh, okay.
And so the idea is that the pin is coded for certain people's DNA. So if other people touch it, nothing happens. But when the person who it's intended for touches it, they're suddenly like transported into this other place and they're in a field. And off in the distance, they can see this massive city. And so when they're back in...
So they're teleported?
They're not teleported. They can only. It's just their vision. They can see it. Okay. So there's one scene where she touches the pin and she sees the field and she starts walking through the field and then walks into a wall and then takes her hand off the pin and she's just like, oh, I'm looking at a wall and there's someone in the room laughing at her and stuff. And so the idea is that humanity's best and brightest decided to go off and be the best and brightest and try to go to a place where they would be free of politics, free of greed, free of corruption, to go and better humanity and make all of these awesome inventions, which the main sort of invention that the movie really focuses on is the creation of a jetpack, because George Clooney's character at like age 9 or 10 comes up with the jetpack and
George.
He finds his way in. Okay.
On you, George.
Yeah, George is pretty good. George Clooney is George Clooney in every movie. That he's in, but he will always be the doctor
from Anatomy.
Yeah, he does a good job, and I think that so part of the problem that they're trying to solve in Tomorrowland is that humanity has. I mean, this is sort of a recurring theme in sci-fi in the last few years, is that humanity's really taken its eyes off the stars, and we're not aspiring to make ourselves greater anymore, and we seem to have become fixated on all of these apocalyptic dramas. Haha, we just saw Mad Max.
This
as well.
Is true.
But it's not necessarily like becoming fixated on post-apocalyptic dramas, but it's more about this is about the end of the world. There's video games that where you're fighting nuclear terrorists and stuff like that. And there's movies where nukes are going off in populated cities. And what Tomorrowland is saying is that if you don't want this to happen, then you have to get up and make a difference. And I think it's a message that's actually worth listening to. And I quite enjoyed the movie because, you know, it's a bit cheesy and it's a bit schmaltzy with all this. You know, you have to have an idea and you have to be willing to push that idea. But the end result, at the end of the movie, like I got quite emotional.
Aww.
It was nice. I liked it. So, okay. There's a lot of critics panning it.
But so yeah, it's gotten a lot of bad reviews, quite frankly. So what's been your take was quite good.
Look, I'm quite well known for being soft on movies.
No, you're soft.
So I like it, but
cool.
I quite enjoyed it. Okay,
you kind of make me want to check it out, but I think I'll wait for DVD.
Sure.
Or maybe if I'm lucky, it'll be on the plane when I'm going to England. I don't think I'm going to be that lucky.
It might be. It's 5 weeks from now.
Could you imagine if it was? That'd be so amazing.
Last time I flew to London, I did actually watch movies most of the way. The in-flight systems are pretty good these days.
Oh yeah. Look, I'm going with a plan. It's going to be interesting. So I'm going to have my iPad with me, but I'm not going to be getting any comics. All of my comics will be sitting here waiting for me to read when I get back, which is a terrifying prospect.
That's quite daunting. You're actually going to need to take a week off.
I'm going for 5 weeks. Well, no, it's kind of a nice thing to do, and at the moment with the current state of things in the Marvel Universe, it's kind of exciting. Right now, what's going on in Marvel is the Marvel Universe has ended.
Yeah.
All of them. The Marvel Universe, and it's all gone. And so that storyline is actually really exciting, and Battleworld is really good. And what's come through from that is, for the next few months anyway, opportunities for writers to create their own stories within the universe. I have not read a bad one yet. Wow. Like, I'm really enjoying, and you know what? I thought at least 3 or 4 of them I would really just roll my eyes at. But so far, I'd really struggle with is Armory Wars. But actually, I really enjoyed the story. I really enjoyed the tone. Like, they're doing a really smart way of engaging me as a reader, and I'm liking it.
So give me the reading order in which I need to get up to speed on this.
I can't. I've read the first 3 weeks of issue number ones.
Secret Wars is going on.
What you want to read, right? Secret Wars is going on, and what you want to read is Secret Wars. Mm-hmm. Essentially, to get the backstory, you want to read The Avengers.
Which Avengers story is that?
The Avengers. Yeah. Well, this is the problem. Like, Hickman's entire run. And you're not going to do that. So what you need to know is that in the Avengers and New Avengers, in New Avengers, they've discovered the world's world is ending. Earths are colliding into each other and universes are being destroyed. And it's happening in a greater and greater. And basically, they're trying to stop it.
So basically, New Avengers is now like season 3 of
Fringe? It's all gone. So essentially what happens then is there are only 2 universes left. the Ultimate Universe and Earth, and they collide, and they're basically battling because they're like, if we destroy the other Earth, then we get to live. That's not actually the case. Hmm. Everything's destroyed.
So to bring it back to the Mad Max reference, so it's like Universe Thunderdome.
But it's so exciting. Do you know what? It's so...
Well, it's a battle dome, isn't it? So it is a Thunderdome.
I think we've got time before you leave. I might give you a couple of issues to read.
I'll read them on the plane.
It's really exciting. Just read Secret Wars. If there's other ones you need to pick up, you can. But the thing with Battle World is what they've turned around and said is very much, you know, Doom doesn't allow people to cross into another universe. It's a collection of different multiverses, and it's like you can't get to go from one to the other. And Doom is God. And...
So when you say Doom is going, you mean Doctor Doom?
Doctor Doom has grabbed pieces of the universes as they've collided, chucked them all together, and this is what's left. And it's survived for 8 years.
Okay.
And this is what's left. And it's really interesting. Like, even though it's not touched on in the main story, there's one story which is basically in Manhattan. You have our universe and the Ultimate Universe sandwiched together. So Peter Parker, as Spider-Man, is freaking out because everyone from the Ultimate Universe knows he's Peter Parker. And he's like, but what happens when the world goes back? And they're like, but there is no world to go back to.
Hmm.
Like, that's the thing. It's really interesting to look at, and the tone is really exciting. So I highly recommend. I'm loving what Marvel are doing at the moment. Anything else you want to recommend before we switch off?
I don't know. Have you been keeping up with The Walking Dead?
No.
The comics. So
I'm way behind in them.
So, The Walking Dead did, I think it was about a year ago, where they published every 2 weeks with a series called All Out War. And they did that. I think it ended up going for sort of about 6 months or so. There was like 12 or 13 issues of it. And then they sort of hit the fast forward switch and jumped forward a year. And so The Walking Dead has sort of gone into more of an empire building space than it was in before. So it's not like
it needed to, let's be honest.
Yeah. And so I'm really enjoying Walking Dead at the moment, but I just wish that I could get it more often. Like, I don't want to wait a month for the next issue.
Well, welcome to comics.
Here's the other big thing that's going to happen, and it's going to happen this month.
Mm-hmm.
Fables 150.
Oh, wow.
It's Fables 150. It's the final issue of Fables.
Wow.
It is actually a graphic novel. So, like...
The final issue.
I think issue 149 came out in, like, February or March. And I went to download the new issue the other day. I'm like, wait, where is it? What's going on? Googled it. And it's like, yeah, it's coming out in June. The cover got revealed a few weeks ago. Snow White and Rose Red in angelic armor going into battle with each other.
Oh, awesome.
Looks really good.
That's exciting.
So yeah, I'm sure we'll have a good chat about that next time.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for popping by in Melbourne and onto the episode as well. This has been a fun chat. If you want to get in touch with Jason, they can get you where on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at JM77. You can also find me on the Transformers Collectors Club Australia Off the Shelf podcast. If you're not a member of the group on Facebook, you can search for Off the Shelf and you can find it that way.
And of course, you know you can catch me at Guy Fi, that's Guy_Fi on Twitter, and Guy Fi Podcast on Facebook. We hope you guys are having a good Queen's Birthday weekend, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.